On Friday we discussed what are known as yajna, dana and tapas, which were regarded by the orthodox religious people as essential for attaining moksha. They found that activity was inevitable, since life is motion and motion is activity, and that activity naturally tended towards pursuit of pleasure. Once I taste some pleasure, I want more and more of it. Once I taste the importance of wealth, I want more and more of it. And they also saw, from their point of view, their point of vantage, that all this was limited as well as limiting. And they wanted that to be kept in mind constantly. You cannot help experiencing pleasure, just as you cannot help experiencing pain. But when you experience pleasure, there is a hook in it, which makes you pursue it, look for a repetition of the pleasure. And then you forget, in that ball game, you forget what's happening. You pursue pleasure and you avoid pain. That's the ball game that goes on all the time. And in the heat of that pursuit of pleasure and wealth, power, you forget that all this has a limitation, yama. All this has an end. There's a lovely little story in one of the Upanishads where a young boy looks at yama and says, "Sah, what use is all this? Long life of 10,000, 50,000 years and all the pleasures of the world when you are still there. Death is still there. What is a lifespan of 100 years or 200 years? We are frantically trying to prolong life. 100, 150, 200? It's nothing in history. If you look at that clod of earth, that little bit of rock, it says, I've lived much longer here than you have. In geological time, they are nothing. In cosmic time, they are nothing. Even geological time is nothing. So, how do we keep the pursuit of pleasure and power and wealth within decent boundaries? That was their only aim. If that was done, it is possible for the individual life to be lived wisely promoting the welfare of the whole community. So their aim was to promote wisdom in the individual and welfare in society. They were quite satisfied. Moksha is your business, not theirs. Liberation is your business. And therefore they fell into a well-intentioned trap of a motivation. A motivation which they considered good motivation. But any motivation is fraught with risk, danger. You couldn't work on all planes at the same time. It's difficult. So their job was over. Krishna came along and he brought about a sort of revolution in it, in the whole concept, in the whole pattern, the whole pattern of thinking, the school of philosophy. He said, as long as the motivation is there, you cannot avoid the polarization of life into good and evil. What you consider good now and get hooked on to itself turns evil by and by. So any motivation is already wrong. But he says in the Gita, this is a very beautiful thought. Yajna, danam, tapas, cheva, pavanani, manishnam. Yajna, dana and tapas, these three that we discussed yesterday, the other day, are good in themselves. Therefore, they do not need a motivation. Yetanyaput karmani sangam tyakpa phalani cha kartavya nitime partha nischayam matamuttamam. These three must be rigorously practiced by everyone. But without motivation, without attachment, sangam tyakva, it's difficult to translate, sangam means contact. Practice all this without contact. The official translation is attachment. Without contact, sangam means just contact. Sangam tyakva phalanicha. And without motivation, without expectation of a reward, without expectation of a result, without hope. Why not use the word, simple word? Can you engage yourself in yajna, sacrifice, dana, charity, tapas, a simple life, without contact? Freedom. Or non-attachment. Without contact at all, and without expectation of reward, which means without hope. And therefore, without motivation at all. Completely without motivation. In other words, can these three become your nature? Can yajna, sacrifice, dana, charity, and tapas become your nature, so that they need no motivation at all? This concept of asanga, sangam tyakva, this concept of non-attachment or freedom, I don't know if it can be terribly made absolutely clear. So follow this carefully. What is freedom? What is non-attachment? And if you translate that word absolutely literally, without regard to the grammar, syntax, anything, sangam tyaktva means abandoning contact. How do I live? Abandoning all contact. Knowing that I'm here. So, in order to do that, I must examine what this contact means. What is contact? Contact presupposes a division. And as long as the division is there, there must be contact. I can run away from you. I cannot run away from you unless I contact something else. You are dangling from a tree. And you will continue to hold on to that branch till your foot hits the ground. You cannot hang in mid-space all the time. No. Right? You step off the chair. When you step off the chair, the other foot must be in contact with something. Otherwise, or it comes into contact with something else immediately. You jump off the chair, you land on the ground. You leave one thing go, you are catching something else. This is what happens to most of these wonderful people called Swami, Sannyasis. This is my home, my wife, children, brothers and so on. Oh, I hate them, attachment, I don't want them. Go away. Then what do? You cannot exist in a vacuum. So, you gravitate towards somebody else and call that a spiritual relationship. Marvelous. Is that right? You can run away from home. That's quite very easy. Everybody is running away from home. Today, tomorrow, one day, a little later. If not in pursuit of a mate or a job or something else, in pursuit of death. You're not permanently at home. Not forever. You're kicked out. If you do not kick the home out, the home kicks you out. So, detaching oneself from something else is a tricky affair. Can I live in a vacuum? No. So, what does detachment, non-attachment, detachment mean? Do I pull away from something? That is where it started. That is where all this trouble started. When I became an island to myself, in myself, as myself, and a division was created, it is then that attachment begins. Division and contact are two sides of the same coin. And as long as there is division, there will be contact. You may avoid one contact and establish another contact. And therefore, freedom from attachment means freedom from division. Avoidance of contact means the realization that you and I are one. It's a funny way of looking at it, maybe. I'm not afraid of contact with you because I see there is no division at all. There has never been a division. Not merely with you, but with anybody else. Can one live in that spirit? The spirit in which there is no contact at all, because there is no division. If you look at this, how does contact arise when you realize that in theological language, God is omnipresent, or in metaphysical or yoga vasishtha language, cosmic consciousness alone exists? If one alone exists, how does contact arise in it? Everything is in contact with everything else. Or there is only one. In that one, in that ocean of cosmic consciousness, a concept arises. There is a movement of prana. It's all one. That yellow stuff. It's all one. There is no real division. There is nothing at all. In that there is a movement. In that cosmic consciousness there is a movement of energy. And that forms a spiral. And as that spiral gets formed, there is a greater intensity of energy there. And therefore the density of consciousness around that spiral becomes low. The low density of consciousness is called ignorance. Is that right? I believe that's the same with the physics too. The darkness is low density of light. right? That there is no absolute darkness, they say it's very nearly impossible to find. Black hole out there, yeah. They say absolute darkness is nearly impossible to find. That there is some light even in what we call pitch darkness. The cat is able to see. No? The owl is able to see, which means there is some light in it. Low density of light is darkness, and low density of consciousness is ignorance.
But consciousness is omnipresent.
Right. So even there is consciousness. Only there is the degree difference in density. Now, the next
even
thought may be right. The next statement may be a bit more puzzling. Which means, in truth and in fact, that this cosmic consciousness is everywhere, and where there appears to be a living entity, whether you call it a human body or a dog body or an animal body or a tree body, where you find an individuality, an entity, this consciousness is dense, full, so that this human body is filled with that consciousness. But around it, there is that low density consciousness, which is ignorance. All around this body, I mean, I'm not referring to the prana shield. The prana that surrounds that body, 12 inches, you remember that 12 inches thing is a shield. It's prana, it's full of life. Outside of that, there is a shell. It's not a shield, but a shell. A shell of darkness, which means low density consciousness. Which? Low density consciousness. Consciousness which, whose density is not very high, it is, you know, so that it's very dissipated. So that in relation to the light of consciousness, it appears to be dark.
I just don't understand your accent. There.
Yeah.
This occurs when the spiral arises, it creates.
You're right.
Brings it in, and so that there's
sort of, correct, there's a sort of vacuum around, not complete vacuum, but sort of low density. When that low density consciousness is interpreted as darkness, the thing that is caught up in it, the individual personality, is unable to see beyond the personality itself. That's simple, isn't it? You are caught up in this room, and so even though your eyes are capable of seeing far, they do not see far because the walls prevent, obstruct your vision. And as far as I am concerned, I don't know the orthodox view, as far as I am concerned, that shell itself is hell. Only again, a spelling mistake. There is no hell outside that shell, that limited existence. I am limited because I cannot see. I am not limited. You can walk 100 miles, 2,000, 200 miles right from now. But if you are walking in that direction, you cannot walk more than 6 paces because your march is obstructed by the wall. This thing inside is full of cosmic consciousness. It is full with cosmic consciousness. This body itself is filled with cosmic consciousness. There is a, I nearly swore, hell of a lot more intelligence in one of those little cells, of which you have about, I believe there are 300 million in your head, a few more billions around that body. Each one of that cell is a lot more intelligent than all the scientists of the world put together. One strand of your hair keeps all the world guessing, even now. What is it made of? How does it grow? Terrible, isn't it? He's supposed to be very intelligent. And his head is full of brains. Look at what comes out of it, hair. Terrible, isn't it? And somebody was mentioning about a white girl eating brown girl eating white milk and the growing black hair. He doesn't eat hair at all and still hair comes out of it, he said. One strand of your hair keeps all the scientists guessing. And whenever they are able to count the number of hair on this girl's head, that fellow gets a Nobel Prize. It's silly. There is a metaphysically, for some reason or other, they say that the body is inert. But if you look at it from another point of view, every cell of the body is filled with the same cosmic consciousness. But unfortunately, on account of the fact that it is this whole body or the whole personality is enclosed in this shell of low density consciousness, there is a concept, a notion, or an idea of limitation.
Well, is that saying in a sense that, like, that shell is inherent around the body? So unless you transcend the body...
Yeah. You're jumping the guns. That's a karma yoga. That's all. It's as simple as that. This spiral, from where does it spring? From this cosmic consciousness. But since it is enclosed within that shell of darkness, ignorance, it does not even realize that this impulse or this movement of energy happens and will continue to happen in cosmic consciousness and nowhere else. Even that is forgotten. So that which arose in cosmic consciousness thinks that it is a small, little, limited, finite little human being, or a doggy being, or a tree being. Only from that point of view, all this theory of evolution, etc., seem to have no sense at all. According to Yoga Vasishtha again. The same consciousness which sits there and thinks that I am an enlightened young lady licks its foot, sitting there as a dog. Same, exactly the same. Same cosmic consciousness, same energy. Not even a degree of difference. And the same cosmic consciousness hangs here as a chart. Thinks it's a chart. So that, having forgotten, as it were, its identity or its oneness or its indivisibility, that's the word, in cosmic consciousness, this individual assumes a duality and therefore it becomes individuality. It is indivisible, but it has assumed a duality and it is called individuality. Having assumed this individuality, again, it looks around, it's unable to pierce, look through that low density consciousness which is called ignorance. And life goes on, the movement of life goes on, the movement of energy goes on, activity goes on, and all that activity is centered in this individuality. I must be happy, I must be healthy, I must live long. Whatever I do is for me. Can you for one moment forget all that and see movement of energy going through all that. In and through the shell, in and through the whole thing. Disregarding the low density consciousness, disregarding the shell. Just as what they call alpha rays, gamma rays can go through all of us without any let or hindrance. Even so, cosmic energy seems to flow everywhere, regardless of whether it is called a human body or a dog body or a tree body. Cosmic consciousness, cosmic energy is in constant motion. And yet, as it passes through that, this little fellow standing there says, I am doing this. And it's for me. I am doing this, and it is because I want something. I am doing this. You must meditate upon that. I am doing this, and I am doing this because I want so and so and so. Whereas the truth is, it is the cosmic energy that flows everywhere. And as it flows everywhere, it also flows through here. It also flows through the shell, the apparent shell, and the individuality that is enclosed in that shell. The same energy flows through, the same consciousness exists in it already. And while that happens, the individual thinks, I am doing this. In order to say, I am doing this, a division has to be made. And only when that division is made can contact be established with it, with this movement of energy. Otherwise the movement is, it's not even me, it goes on everywhere. So that individualizing process is the division. And out of that arises the ego sense or the doership, I am doing this. It is not as if the cosmic energy is flowing in everywhere, all the time. There is an identification. There is a contact. There is an attachment. And from that springs a motivation. I am doing this because I want to get experience greater happiness, pleasure. The avoidance of these two is possible only if that low density of consciousness can be somehow either abolished or pierced through. Either you expand so much, either this fellow expands so much that he pushes through the shell, or he looks straight into that shell and abolishes it. Yajna, dana and tapas, sacrifice, charity and tapas, if they are intelligently practiced, with intelligently in the sense that one who practices these is constantly aware of this individuality and of the fact of the existence of the shell, and of the fact that that shell does not cancel the fact of cosmic consciousness, that the air, that the space and the consciousness, that the energy exists everywhere all the time. That the fact or the apparent fact that the room has come up here has not taken away the space that was here. putting up of this room has not taken away the space that was here. And the air that circulates in this room was there before. I may pump more air out of it or pump more air into it, but it is non-different. The energy is non-different from the whole. The consciousness is non-different from the totality. If whatever action is done in that spirit, then the mischief of individuality can be overcome. How does one do that? Again, once again, we go back to the same three, yajna, dana, and tapas. Tapas, in this light, in the light of the Bhagavad Gita, in the light of Karma Yoga, tapas is a simple life. What is a simple life? Non-complicated life. And what is complicated life? Complicated life is a life of extremes.